This is Yvonne Tinner. I'm here in Perth, Australia tonight with
Robert Cunningham. I'm an associate professor at the University of Western Australia, where the NeoLife conference is taking place.
So you just published a book dealing with information environment or something like
that? Yeah, it's called Information Environmentalism. Yeah. The subtopic is a governance framework for intellectual property rights.
I was very interested to make a podcast with you because I think you can shed some light on the legal side of biotechnologies and all this, the issues surrounding those topics.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity. I mean, I guess the perspective that I bring to this conference is to start thinking about the way, the lessons that we can learn from the regulation of the physical world when looking at the world of information. So, you know, if we go back 50 or 60 or 70 years ago, there were a lot of environmental problems, but at that time there were not many regulations to protect the environment. There were some, but there wasn't really too many laws that aimed at protecting the environment. I think that in this century, given that we are in the information age, we now need to think about creating essentially an environmental law for the information world. And so what I'm interested in is what lessons can we take from the regulation of the physical world when looking at the regulation of information. So if you take an example, at some point in time in history we saw the need to create national parks, you know, physical national parks to look after certain aspects of nature. Now, if we were to take that idea and to think about how would that idea apply to the world of information, then I think it raises some really interesting questions about, okay, well, if we were to have an information national park, what would we want to see in that national park? You know, and I mean, you can call this informational national park the Information Commons, or you can call it a whole range of different names. But basically what it's about is taking a bundle of information and saying that information cannot be owned by anyone in particular. We should all have access to that information.
And so let me just interrupt you here, because basically the idea is that by creating new spaces, you know, the theme of the conference is NeoLife, so maybe that by creating new spaces or new forms of life, are you also concerned by this kind of impact that biotechnologies could have on nature, or you're dealing with something else?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think where I stand on biotechnology is that I'm basically agnostic, which is to say that I don't really think it's positive or negative, of and by itself. The thing that I'm most concerned about is who owns the technology.
Just to precise my question.
Yeah,
it's not. I'm not meaning that this is either positive or negative.
Yes.
I'm just saying that we don't know if by creating a new living form, which kind of effect it can have on the natural environment.
Yes.
And maybe that it can go in the reverse way.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's just precise.
I think I understand the question. I mean, I used to be concerned about the effect that biotechnology would have on nature. So that I was concerned that the biotechnology could actually lead to problems with nature. But over time, I changed my view on that, and now my view is essentially that it's not so much whether or not biotechnology will have a positive or negative effect on nature or any of those sorts of things. The only thing that I feel like matters the most is who actually controls the technology.
So you're more on the issues of power?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I think that that's really the central issue, is who has power over the technology. And while it's true that we could have an individual person that's engaged in some sort of bioterrorist act, that's not the thing that I worry about. What I worry about is big companies or governments taking control of this technology in the way that they already have,
mm-hmm.
and manipulating that technology for their own benefit. So, you know, I understand that there are weaknesses with that argument, and that that biotechnology of and by itself could create real difficulties, but it's not the thing that I'm worried about.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
you know that there will be a conference in Paris dealing with climate change and environmental issue.
Yes.
And, do you have any particular take on this kind of summit organized by the UN?
In relation to climate change and generally, or?
Or environmental issue generally, not just climate change.
Yeah, look, I mean, the way I look at it is that, you know, the destruction of the environment has led to a pushback in relation to a whole range of different issues. So climate change, for some reason, has become the focus for the last couple of decades. It's obviously an important issue, but there are many other very important environmental issues as well that we don't seem to talk about so much anymore.
So which one seems to you closer than...
Well, biodiversity, I think, is a very important issue. You know, I think... the systems that we have in place, the political and economic systems, tend to create homogenized systems that actually diminish biodiversity over time.
Okay.
And, I mean, climate change is also part of that story. Yeah, I mean, so I guess my interest in environmentalism is basically from the theoretical perspective.
Yeah.
And there are four different theories that I focus on in my work. So ecology is one.
Yeah.
The commons
is another.
Welfare economics, and public choice theory. So each of these are like different streams that flow into a river that essentially represent the environmental movement. And what I basically would say is that each one of those frameworks has a big lesson for us as humanity. You know, so ecology, for example, it teaches us about the importance of diversity. You know, so if we ever create systems that undermine diversity, then ecology is basically telling us that we're moving in the wrong direction. You know, with the commons teaches us that we always need to have spaces in the world that are not owned by one individual or by one company or by one entity, but that we should all have a claim to certain things in the world. So whether it's you walking down in the park, or going to the library and getting a book, or breathing the air, these are all issues of the commons, you know, and no one should actually own certain things. And we need to become clear about what those things are, especially in the digital age when we're talking about information.
And what is your take about the role of the artist in...
Well, for me, the role of the artist is to essentially take power away from concentrated interests and to imagine a different future about how technology can be used. So, I mean, this is what I'm going to be talking about.
Does it imply that he has to take the power himself or herself?
Yeah, you have to take power, because power will never be given to you. So... the only way of actually acquiring power is to take it. And
so within that whole reflection about issues of powers and who actually controls, are you concerned also when it is actually the artist who controls? What do you think about that?
It's a good question. I think it depends on the artist. In my view, if the artist is representing dominant interests, which can sometimes happen, then they're not truly an artist, in my view.
Even if they're not aware about that?
Yeah, I think an artist, if to be, to call themselves an artist, they have to be conscious, and they have to be consciously, actively involved in trying to make the world a better place. Otherwise, you're something other than an artist.
So you think that art is meant to make a better world?
I think the artist has a responsibility to make the world a better place. In the same way that I think philosophers have the duty, in the same way that scholars, Like, there are certain people in the world that have a duty, I think, to make the world a better place. Otherwise, you don't have the right to call yourself that, to operate under that label. You know, you can't call yourself a philosopher. You can't call yourself an artist. You can't call yourself a scholar.
If you're not
seeking to make the world a better place. Now, there's always going to be debate about what that means.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, a debate that, you know, we can have. But if the artist or the philosopher or the scholar is just representing the interests of power,
yeah,
then I have a problem with them operating under those labels.
Again, I think that would be a good topic for another podcast. I will leave that question open. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That's good.